Hello. Welcome to the Leicester Mercury Talking Newspaper for Thursday, Friday and Saturday, April the 5th, 6th and 7th. It is produced by Vista. Telephone number 0116 249 8839. Items are selected and read by Marion, Stacia and Mary. And it's recorded for us this week by Rob. Sunrise and sunset times for the week beginning Monday the 9th. Sunrise 6:21 a.m. Sunset 7:51 p.m. And I'm beginning with the headline from the Leicester Mercury, Thursday, April the 5th. Hero praised for capture of bank bag thief. And the full story goes like this. A mugger who snatched a woman's bag containing £3,100 was chased down and tackled by a brave bank customer. Abdi Osman grabbed the woman's handbag as she walked into the Barclays branch in Evington Road, Leicester. The shocked victim, who was about to deposit the takings from a restaurant, screamed for someone to stop him. And Mukul Redhu, who saw the incident as he came out of the bank, chased Osman along nearby St Stephen's Road, retrieved the bag and held on to the thief until police arrived. At Leicester Crown Court, Judge Philip Head jailed Osman, age 31, for 16 months and publicly commended his captor, saying, "Mr. Redhu was extremely courageous. The bag snatch unfolded before his eyes and the victim was asking for help. Without hesitation, he chased after the defendant and managed to catch him, literally collaring him, and told him to put the bag down. Mr. Osman did, without resistance, but Mr. Redhu hadn't known what he would encounter when he caught up with him. He acted in a public-spirited way, and his actions are altogether admirable and involve the recovery of a substantial amount of money. I am awarding Mr. Redhu £150 from public funds. I'm very grateful for everything he did." In sentencing, the judge said he accepted the bag snatch was not pre-planned and told Osman, "You didn't have any idea of the size of your catch. The victim was extremely shaken by what happened, and it's had an ongoing effect on her confidence." Osman, of Maidstone Road, Highfields, in the city, admitted theft of the handbag, which had also contained an iPhone 7 and the owner's purse and personal belongings. Neil Bannister, prosecuting, said the victim was delivering cash takings from the Cedars in Evington to the bank when Osman walked out of the Barclays and forcefully grabbed the bag from under her arm, breaking the strap as he did so. Mr. Redhu gave chase, grabbed hold of the defendant by his collar. A number of people gathered and the police arrived shortly afterwards to arrest the defendant. The victim felt very angry about the incident and was left shaken and anxious, and she's had difficulty sleeping and had to take time off work. The court heard that Osman was on licence at the time from a 5 years and 7 months jail sentence for drugs offences, and he had been recalled now back to prison. His 16-month sentence will run concurrently with the unexpired licence period that he still had to serve. Eugene Hickey, mitigating, said, "There's no suggestion he knew the complainant had takings from her workplace with her. He was only expecting what might usually be found, including a mobile phone. He didn't get away with it, and he seemed relatively willing to hand back the bag." Mr. Hickey said the defendant was released on licence from his previous sentence 2.5 years ago and stayed off drugs until his long-term relationship broke down and he returned to using Class A drugs. This offence was committed so he could obtain funds to get drugs, said Mr. Hickey.
City Council wants to buy back some old housing stock. More than £400,000 could be used to buy back City Council houses that were sold under right to buy. More than 800 council homes have been bought in the city over the past 3 years, with the Labour-run authority saying right to buy has contributed to the lack of affordable housing. Under the process of selling its homes, the council can use a limited proportion of the money it gets to pay half the cost of buying back homes it once owned. The council must fund the other 50% itself, so it has now said it wants to make some £440,000 available towards that cost. Officials say this would allow 6 homes to be repurchased and then made available at an affordable rent level. The council has nearly £2 million in its housing revenue account, HRA, for the provision of social housing. If the council does not make use of the buyback allowance money, it is handed over to the government. A city council spokesman said, purchasing properties is a relatively quick and easy way of helping to reduce the effect on the HRA of reduced rental income, albeit to a limited extent due to the low value of receipts that can be applied in this way. Council lawyers have, however, said the repurchased homes could again be bought under right to buy. There are 6,000 people on the long-term waiting list for a council property in Leicester, of which there are about 20,000. While the Labour Council is hostile to the right to buy scheme, City Mayor Sir Peter Soulsby has called for it to be scrapped. Supporters of it say it is an important part of helping people get onto the property ladder. Last month, the council said it would use £2 million to set up its own house building company, which would look to build 50 council homes this year on sites it owns across the city. However, it has come under fire for its decision to demolish the 23-storey Goscott House in Highfields without producing any firm proposals for replacing the 134 units of social housing that will be lost.
Deadline looms for the groups fighting to save 24 children's centres. These services can't be cut. Time is running out for the public to have a say on plans that could see 24 children's centres and one family centre close. Leicestershire County Council has announced plans to bring together a range of early help and prevention support into one new style service. Consultation on the changes, which are opposed by some centre users and politicians, including Save Our Children's Centres, SOCC, Leicestershire, ends on April the 22nd. County Hall is proposing to merge Children's Centres Supporting Leicestershire Families, SLF, Youth Offending Services, YOS, and Information, Support and Assessment Teams into a Family Wellbeing Service. It said this would be run from 15 buildings across the county, a reduction of 25, including 24 children's centres, and include support delivered in homes and other community venues. The move would reduce costs by £3.8 million, with £1.5 million of this from the council budget and £2.3 million from the council, partners and the government. Councillor Ivan Auld, a cabinet member for Children and Families, said, helping the most vulnerable families is key, and the proposed new service would ensure they receive the specialist tailored support they need. Although bringing together these services would help us to tackle problems at an early stage more effectively, it does mean that fewer people would receive support. That's why we're committed to understanding the impact. We've carried out a lot of work analysing options, but it's important now to hear the views of residents, and I'd encourage people to have their say. Liz Yates, one of the founders of SOCC, who used the centres with her daughter, has said, "We cannot allow these services to be cut from the lives of the most vulnerable, and we've got to defend the jobs of the people who have dedicated their careers to assisting our most vulnerable young children." Public consultation events are to be held as follows. Blaby, April the 9th, 6:30pm to 8pm, Countersthorpe, Laysland College, Winchester Road, Countersthorpe. Melton, April the 11th, 6:30pm to 8pm, Melton Theatre, Asfordby Road. Hinckley, April the 17th, 6:30pm to 8pm, Green Towers, Richmond Road. Charnwood, April the 18th, 6:30pm to 8pm, Main Hall, Rosebery St Peter's, Storer Road, Loughborough. Helping the most vulnerable families is key, and the proposed service would ensure they receive the specialist tailored support they need.
On the run to help patients. Two health service managers are teaming up to boost a scheme designed to help hospital patients. Nick Stone, a financial controller at University Hospitals of Leicester NHS Trust, and Simon Pitsey, head of planning for East Leicestershire and Rutland Clinical Commissioning Group, are running the London Marathon on April the 22nd. They will raise money for Leicester Hospital's charity and Red to Green. Red to Green is a service that aims to help improve patients' comfort, dignity and well-being during their hospital stay and minimise the amount of time they are kept waiting in hospital. Mr. Pitsey said, "Following my time as a general manager of the medicine for the elderly wards, I have become passionate about supporting patients to become active and ensure they are able to recover as soon as possible. I believe this is a brilliant cause that will improve the quality of life for the most vulnerable in society. It offers the potential to address one of the most challenging aspects of hospital admissions, inactivity and loneliness." Mr. Stone said, "I want to do something that will really benefit patients, and I've had an ambition for a long time to run a marathon, so what better way to do both? I've been involved with Leicester Hospital's charity for 9 years and have seen the huge benefits to patients and staff that it has delivered over that time. Red to Green will make an immediate improvement to the lives of patients, particularly those who are vulnerable and lonely. Both runners want to raise £1,500. Louise Moran, Red to Green improvement sister at the Hospital Trust, said, "We are giving Nick and Simon our full support and thank them for choosing to raise awareness and vital funds that will have a direct benefit to our patients. By aiming to aid the patient experience at our hospitals, we hope to improve patient morale, mobility and mood, helping to get them home earlier."
Grieving mum's anger. A mum has hit out at a council for introducing a ban on unauthorised memorials on graves. Carly Simon has started an online petition against the decision by Sowerby Parish Council to stop people decorating plots in their own style at the town's cemetery. Miss Stone has been decorating the grave of her son Noah, who was buried there after being stillborn in July 2014. The 28-year-old who lives in Sowerby said, "There was a notice on my son's grave about the ban. I can barely find the words to explain how upsetting this is. The first I knew was a notice on my son's grave telling me about the ban. They had put messages on every grave in the cemetery. It looked horrendous." Miss Stone lives with her partner Ollie Baker and children 2-year-old Hallia and 9-month-old son Albie. She said, "If this is taken away from us, the result would be devastating. It may sound a bit odd, but it's sort of a happy place for us. The notice displayed at Sowerby Cemetery has caused local bereaved families a huge amount of upset and distress. The notice states that unauthorised memorials on our loved ones' graves must be removed straight away, or they will be removed by the council on April the 20th. This decision has been made without any consultation with deed holders and without considering the feelings of the families affected. On a personal note, my family and I visit our baby son's grave very often, and it is a huge part of our lives to be able to decorate his grave as we wish. Our children regularly visit with us and bring toys, and this to us would be a tradition for the rest of our lives. We have no other way of making memories with our son, and if this honour is taken away from us, the result of that would be beyond devastating. A vital part of the grieving process for any bereaved family is visiting their loved one's grave and bringing flowers and ornaments and making it look personal to them. Having a number of small ornaments and decorations does not affect the maintenance of the cemetery. Our son has been there for almost 4 years now, and the cemetery always looks well maintained. There has been silence from the council regarding this matter until now, yet there have always been memorials there. I find it extremely difficult to understand how pretty ornaments and well-presented graves stop the council and the cemetery from being a safe, tranquil and dignified environment, as quoted from the notice displayed. Carly said she had put two plastic spinning wheels, two toy cars, flowers and a toy Noah's Ark with animals on her son's grave, plus a small plastic fence to keep it tidy. By yesterday, Miss Stone online had gathered 1,038 signatures. The Leicester Mercury has contacted Sowerby Parish Council for a comment, but it has not received a reply.
Approval for Bar's Street Cafe plans. A cocktail bar has been given permission to have a street cafe in Leicester's Guildhall Lane, despite concerns it would lead to noise and nuisance in the quiet city centre street. Gadabout, formerly Taps, wanted to put 6 tables and 24 chairs on the street at the rear of Leicester Cathedral, which would be available for drinkers as late as 1:30 a.m. The proposal, however, proved unpopular with nearby residents and businesses who said it would be too large and too loud. Members of Leicester City Council's licensing committee met yesterday to discuss the plan. Gadabout bosses have refined their application to have the street cafe until 11 p.m. after the initial objections, but there were still concerns that this was too late. Ina Martin, who lives next to Gadabout, told councillors she had had 3 years of experience living next to a smaller street seating area, which was open for fewer hours under Taps. She said the proposal would disturb residents, and City Council policy was to encourage quieter streets near the cathedral. She said, with the exception of Gadabout, there is nothing open on Guildhall Lane after 6 p.m. She said existing street seating outside Almeida's and the Buddhist Cafe was always removed by that time. She claimed Gadabout would be used by hen and stag parties who would be encouraged to drink and smoke right outside her home. Mrs. Martin said in the past drinkers had stood outside her house at night, knocking on the door and then played dumb when she answered. Leicester Civic Society also objected, saying the proposal would encourage drinking in the historic streets around the cathedral. Nicholas Amir Beg from Gadabout told councillors the business had only opened in November. He said the seating area would be fenced off to stop customers spilling out into the wider street. He said, "We want to make it nice and friendly. It might bring a little talking noise out there. We don't want to be a nuisance." He argued the presence of seating on the street would actually make the area safer, and cited an incident last month where 2 teenagers were mugged at knife point nearby and were able to take refuge in the bar until the police arrived. He added, "We want to encourage a cafe culture." He said he was looking to try to change the old clientele of taps, who he described as loud and brash, saying, "We have got rid of them." Councillors considered the evidence and granted Gadabout a street cafe licence, but restricted it to 4 tables and 16 chairs and said it could only be used without outside music until 9 p.m.
Arts Projects Funding Boost. Almost £280,000 of Arts Council funding has been awarded to a project linking libraries with children and families. Spark Arts for Children in Leicester will receive £279,200 for Among Ideal Friends, AIF, a collaboration with 5 library services: Leicester, Leicestershire, Nottingham, Nottinghamshire and Rutland. It will be used to create and establish a range of high-quality book and story-based performances and workshops for children aged 5 to 11 and their families and schools. The work will be shared across 55 libraries. Adel Al-Saloum, Director of Sparks Arts for Children, said, "Libraries are wonderful places that reflect all that is healthy about a community, inclusive, accessible, and a champion of ideas. Through the stories of many, we are given the permission to imagine our own, to create new possibilities for ourselves in a shared, safe place. Arts Council England's investment in our collective ambition and approach to making and sharing stories will enable many more children, families and schools to experience the transformative power of theatre in the heart of their neighbourhood, their library." Peter Knott of Arts Council England said, "Getting young people and their families excited about books and performance while being involved with their library is a truly wonderful ambition. Libraries are viewed as safe spaces for learning and discovery and can open doors for children, inspiring them to seek knowledge in every aspect of their life. We are delighted to support this project, which has the potential to make a real difference as it tours to communities in the East Midlands. The money comes from the Arts Council's National Lottery-supported strategic touring programme. Schools taking part can also work for ArtsMark Awards. ArtsMark is an award for schools and education settings and recognises their commitment to high-quality arts and cultural education. It is awarded by Arts Council England and it provides a framework for schools to plan, develop and evaluate their arts provision."
The Leicester Mercury headlines for Friday, April the 6th. Danger driver left his friend brain damaged. Passenger suffered brain damage when vehicle hit tree. A dangerous driver who crashed into a tree, causing his passenger friend to suffer a life-changing brain injury, is facing jail. Sagan Bavskar was speeding on the wrong side of the road with no headlights on when he almost collided head-on with a taxi. He then swerved into a tree in Knighton Grange Road, Oadby, in the early hours of October the 27th, 2016. It happened in a Land Rover Discovery that Bavskar had earlier taken without the owner's consent. A jury of 4 women and 8 men took 1 hour and 6 minutes to convict him unanimously of causing serious injury to Manjot Singh Mann by driving dangerously. Mr. Mann, 23, was trapped unconscious in the front passenger seat until freed by the Fire and Rescue Service. Sarah Porter, prosecuting, said the victim, who was not wearing a seatbelt, suffered brain damage, facial fractures and a collapsed lung, and now requires full-time care. Bavsar of Gainsborough Road, Clarendon Park, Leicester, denied the allegation, claiming it was an accident and his driving was not to blame because he was forced to swerve to avoid 2 females who ran into the road. He did not give evidence in his defence in court, but prepared a statement given to the police. He claimed he was not speeding, drove on the correct side of the road, and his headlights were on. The verdict judge, Jinder Singh Bora, adjourned the hearing until next month for a pre-sentence report. Releasing Bavsar on bail, he said the defendant was likely to receive a custodial sentence. During the trial, taxi driver Mohammed Rehman, who witnessed the crash, told the jury he had to swerve out of the defendant's way to save himself and his three passengers. He said, "I was travelling towards Oadby. I noticed a car without lights on my side of the road. It's a 30-mile limit, and it was going at least 50 miles an hour, although I can't be precise. I had to swerve into his side of the lane when it was about three car lengths away. I thought he was going head to head with me. I realised he wasn't going to move out of the way. I went onto his side of the road to save myself. I swerved before the Land Rover hit the tree. It was a matter of seconds. As I passed, the Discovery mounted the curb on the wrong side of the road. I saw it hit the tree in my wing mirror." Mr. Rehman and his passengers stopped to assist and call the emergency services. The defendant passed a roadside breath test and was not over the drink drive limit. Under cross-examination, Mr. Rehman said he did not see any pedestrians in Knight and Grange Road. The defence argued the collision happened after the Discovery had passed the taxi and Mr. Rehman may not have seen pedestrians crossing behind him in the road. In his closing speech, defence barrister Richard Gibb said, "Mr. Rehman must be mistaken," and strongly criticised the adequacy of the police investigation, with no expert having examined the accident scene or crashed vehicle. Detective Constable Simon Roberts conceded in court, in hindsight, potentially important omissions were made in the inquiry.
Cat's horrific injuries after being caught in illegal trap. A cat suffered horrific injuries when an illegal trap snapped shut on its leg, crushing the limb. Workers at Grange Business Park in Enderby Road, Whetston, discovered the she-cat in a car park with the metal spring trap still biting into her leg. Unable to free herself from the serrated teeth, she was dragging the trap along. Officials from animal charity, the RSPCA, have now issued a warning for people to be vigilant, saying the gin trap, a vicious device which has been banned in the UK for 60 years, could have injured a child. Animal collection officer Sharon Knight said this poor cat's leg was in a very bad way, mangled by the serrated steel jaws of this vicious device. The cat was discovered on Thursday, March the 29th. It is not known for how long she had been suffering, nor where she was caught by the trap. Miss Knight said, "We suspect she had been trapped for some time. I rushed her to Park Vets in Glenfield for emergency treatment." After examining the cat, the vet decided that to save her life, the only option was to amputate her front leg. The operation was successful and the cat, which is not microchipped, is being cared for at the RSPCA's Woodside Animal Centre in Scudamore Road, Braunston Frith, Leicester, until she has recovered enough to be rehomed. She has been named Tink by the staff. The RSPCA is now urging pet owners to watch out for the traps, which are still being used illegally to catch animals such as rabbits and foxes. Miss Knight said there is no legitimate explanation for this horrible trap to be set. The use of gin traps has been illegal for 60 years for a very good reason. They are indiscriminate. Victims can just as easily be a family pet, a wild animal, or even a child. These spring-loaded, serrated devices snap shut with great force, causing a great deal of suffering. We are extremely concerned about their use. We would like to warn pet owners and parents to be on the alert for these dangerous contraptions. Owning a gin trap is not illegal, but using them has been banned for 60 years. The trap which injured Tink is in the hands of the chief RSPCA inspector working on the case, the charity said. What is the legislation? The Small Ground Vermin Traps Order 1958 banned the use of traps like this. The legislation, which was put before Parliament on January the 13th, 1958, came into operation on February the 1st, 1958. The legislation does not, however, apply to traps adapted solely for the destruction of rats, mice, or other small ground vermin.
New free school set to be built in city centre. A 1,200 capacity secondary school will be built next to the River Soar in Leicester city centre. Rushymead Educational Trust has just announced the site of its new free school, which is expected to open in September 2019. Education bosses at the Trust say the school, which will be known as Castle Mead Academy, will be built in the heart of historic Leicester, close to the Friars Mill regeneration area and the High Cross shopping centre. They say this means it will have excellent transport links. Rushymead Academy is the lead school in the Trust, with Castle Mead set to be the eighth addition to its family of schools. It will have a special focus on EBAC subjects, which comprise English, maths, a science, foreign language, and history or geography. A spokesman for the Trust said, Castle Mead will build on Rushymead Academy's outstanding track record, providing a broad, balanced and inclusive curriculum with its special focus on the EBAC subjects. It will draw on first-class leadership and outstanding teaching and learning practices to support each learner, making sure that they have every opportunity to achieve. The school's motto, Growing a Community of Excellence, highlights the Trust's commitment to providing an outstanding education that will inspire young people to be the best that they can be so that they become successful, well-rounded and confident members of the global community. Carolyn Robson, Chief Executive of the Trust, said, We are really excited to have this opportunity to provide much-needed additional places for students in Leicester. The school will have 8 forms of entry at Year 7, with admissions from across the city, and eventually it will grow to its full capacity of 1,200 in time. Recruitment for the principal's post begins in April this year. Free schools can be set up by an organisation or a group of individuals. They are funded by the government, but not controlled by the local authority. A number of information events will take place in the summer term and an information evening on September the 11th, 2018.
All of a twitch over a clutch of falcon eggs. Bird lovers are celebrating after a wild peregrine falcon laid 4 eggs in a nest at Leicester Cathedral. The arrival of the quartet of eggs has been recorded on the new Nestbox webcam recently fixed on the city centre site. The camera was fitted into the purpose-built nest in the spire early this year to record the activities and nesting habits of the resident peregrine couple. One egg was recorded in the pair's nest on March the 26th, the second was spotted 3 days later, and the third arrived on Easter Day and the fourth yesterday. The dedicated broadband line has a live feed which can be watched online at the Leicester Peregrine Project website. David Gray, a coordinator at the project, said, This is very exciting news. We had eggs last year, but no chicks for some reason. We now have the live webcam and we now have a clutch of eggs. We hope we'll soon be looking at young chicks in the nest. This webcam has captured people's imaginations and we now have more than 500 followers on Twitter. There are 2 live camera views to choose from. Camera view 1 is called Egg Cam and shows the eggs, and camera 2 is an overview of the nesting site. The project is run by Leicester and Rutland Ornithological Society, LROS, and Leicester City Council, and aims to promote conservation. There are regular text updates on the webcam site detailing the daily behaviour of the birds, which can be seen leaving the eggs unattended. Nest boxes have been installed across the city in locations known to be favoured by the peregrines. The Leicester Cathedral nest box was installed in April 2016. Its location high on the cathedral's 60-metre spire provides an ideal urban alternative to the high, steep cliffs the falcons use in the wild. The falcons are the fastest species of bird recorded, diving at up to 242 miles an hour to swoop on their prey. The Reverend Canon Alison Adams, Canon Pastor and Subdean of Leicester Cathedral, said she was looking forward to a chance to see new chicks hatch in the nest. She said, "We hope very much that this year they might produce offspring, and the webcam will enable everyone to enjoy seeing fledglings growing." The website is leicesterperegrines.org.uk.
Work to start next year on incinerator. Waste handling giant Biffa has indicated it will start building a controversial rubbish incinerator alongside the M1 next year. The firm was granted permission to develop a £200 million complex at Newhurst Quarry near Shepshed in 2012, but apart from site preparation work, no development has commenced. Biffa plans to burn 350,000 tonnes of waste annually, generating 33 megawatts of energy, enough to power 66,000 homes. Now the company has told the Loughborough Echo it expects to begin building in 2019. A spokesman said, "We are pleased to say the commercial, financial and design discussions are in progress with a view to being able to start construction early next year." The intention would be to reconvene the liaison group prior to that. The liaison group included council and residents' representatives to discuss issues arising from the opening of such a large facility. Residents fought a determined but unsuccessful campaign to try to stop the incinerator plans being approved. They argued the burning of so much rubbish would lead to harmful pollution being emitted from its 96-metre chimney. Biffa insisted it had adequate technology to filter out particulates. There were also concerns about lorries delivering rubbish to be incinerated, clogging up the nearby Ashby Road and Junction 23 of the motorway. Leicestershire County Council twice refused Biffa permission for the incinerator, raising among its concerns the overbearing size of it within the picturesque area of Charnwood Forest. However, after a two-week inquiry at Loughborough Town Hall last year, the then Secretary of State for Local Government, Eric Pickles, overruled the County Council. Mr. Pickles wrote in his report that no great weight should be placed on concerns about the air quality or health, because emissions should be kept low. Mr. Pickles concluded the site was very well placed for an incinerator due to the nearby M1, and that the negative impact on the appearance and character of the area was outweighed by the benefits of having an incinerator to produce low carbon energy and get rid of the region's rubbish. During a consultation period on the scheme, the council received objections from 1,361 people who signed petitions, and a further 2,039 who wrote opposing the incinerator. A county council spokesman said at the time, "We are disappointed that the local decision-making has been overturned and will now look carefully at the reasons why the Secretary of State agreed to approve these proposals before we can make any further comment."
For this article, you need to appreciate the word maize can be spelled M-A-Z-E or M-A-I-S-E. And it's about the Wistow maize. Our amazing NHS is ahead of the field. Award-winning county attraction Wistow Maize has revealed the theme for this year's maize, and it's a great one. The NHS will be the subject of the Maize Maze, which opens on Friday, July the 20th. The NHS, which has this year celebrates its 70th anniversary, was chosen as the theme after the attraction ran a competition inviting members of the public to come up with the ideas for the design. Ideas included the Royals, suffragettes and Great War military, as well as the NHS. As a number of people suggested the same theme, entrance names were put into a hat and a winner was drawn at random. And that winner turned out to be Sam Screeton, an NHS nurse from Market Harborough, who won a family ticket as well as the pleasure of having her idea carved into the 8 acres of maize crop. Last year's design was Sherlock Holmes, and according to maize owner Diana Brooks, the maize crop that made up the maize was the tallest it has been in the 14 years the attraction has been open, being 7 foot and increasing in some places to 8 foot high. And there are pictures accompanying this article of the various mazes that have been seen, better seen from above, I believe. So we've got a dinosaur, we've got something to commemorate the beginning of the Great War, and of course last year, Sherlock Holmes. And also one to celebrate Leicester City winning the Premier League. The Wistow Maze for this year will be open from Friday, July the 20th, until Sunday, September the 2nd, and that's 7 days a week. And then, after the 2nd of September, it will only be open until Sunday, September the 23rd.
Police investigate woman's sudden death. Police are investigating the sudden death of a woman in Leicester. Officers were called to a home in Beaumont Leys on Tuesday, following the report that a woman had died. They attended to the address in Ipswich Close just after 11:30 a.m, where a 51-year-old woman was found inside. She was pronounced dead at the scene. The force has said the death is being treated as suspicious. In a statement, police said, "At this stage in the investigation, the death is being treated as suspicious, while further inquiries are conducted to establish the full circumstances." A 59-year-old man from Leicester was arrested on Wednesday in connection with the death and remained in custody yesterday, where he is assisting officers with their inquiries. Police were still stationed outside the home in Ipswich Close yesterday morning. Officers carried out inquiries in the road and tactical support team van was stationed in the road with investigations going on inside the property. A resident who asked to be named only as Neo, who has lived in Ipswich Close since 2012, said, "I am really shocked and we were not told about it by the police. They have come round asking for information and I've said I don't know anything. I asked what happened and they said it would be on the news. Nothing like this has ever happened here while I've lived here. I just want to know what's going on."
Headlines for Leicester Mercury, Saturday, April the 7th. On his way out. As notorious double child killer Colin Pitchfork has his parole date set, family of his first victim are braced for news they don't want to hear. Double child killer Colin Pitchfork will be permanently released from prison following a parole hearing next month, the family of his first victim fears. Pitchfork, who was jailed in 1988 for raping and murdering Leicestershire schoolgirls Linda Mann and Dawn Ashworth, both 15, in 1983 and 1986, will go for a behind-closed-doors parole board scheduled to take place on Thursday, May the 24th. The board will assess whether it would be safe to release the 56-year-old. Its ruling will be made public, but no details of the grounds for its decision will be released. It will consider written statements from the families. Linda's sister, Rebecca Eastwood, said her family believes the killer will be cleared for full release as he has made an unknown number of unescorted trips out of custody, including one in Bristol city centre in the past few months. This week, the family, who have collected 40,000 signatures on petitions against his release, learned for the first time he has been allowed out overnight on his own. Rebecca said he was allowed out in Bristol city centre without any kind of escort late last year, and we were told this week he's been out overnight on his own as well since then. So, by the look of it, they have already made their minds up about him. I think the decision is pretty much made, and he is going to be released after the parole hearing at the end of May. We're told the hearing is on May the 24th, and then it could be anything up to 2 weeks before a decision is made. We really do think we've reached the point where he will be freed. As far as we know, he's going to have a new identity, a new start in life. We are still living with the loss and the consequences of what he did to Linda and Dawn, and still believe it is not safe to release this man. Last summer, the Ministry of Justice told the girls' families that Pitchfork had been allowed to leave custody under the close supervision of prison service personnel. A short time later, the ministry notified them that he was deemed ready for unescorted days out. At the end of October, he was photographed strolling around Bristol city centre, apparently on his own. Pitchfork raped and murdered Linda in November 1983, leaving her body near the Black Pad footpath in Narborough. In July 1986, he took Dawn's life in an identical, brutal fashion, leaving her body in 10 Pound Lane, Narborough. He became the first criminal to be trapped by the revolutionary DNA profiling process pioneered by Sir Alec Jeffreys at the University of Leicester, after thousands of local men gave blood samples for testing against material found on the girls' bodies. He was jailed for a minimum of 30 years, although this was later reduced on appeal to 28. Once released, Pitchfork would remain on licence for the rest of his life and would have restrictions on his movements. This would include a stipulation that he would not be allowed anywhere in Leicestershire or to knowingly approach any of the girl's relatives.
How much less are women earning than men? The gender pay gap figures for Leicester and Leicestershire's public bodies have been revealed. Organisations with more than 250 staff are required by law to report their gender pay gap figures annually. Public sector bodies must publish theirs by March the 30th every year. The figures do not necessarily mean men and women are being paid differently for equal work, but do demonstrate the gap across the whole workforce. Of the public bodies the Leicester Mercury has looked at, the widest gap exists at University Hospitals Leicester NHS Trust, where women are paid on average 25.9% less than men. The overall UK gender pay gap for all employees was 18.1% for mean hourly pay. That was in May 2016. Louise Tibbett, Director of Workforce and Organisational Development at Leicester Hospital, said, "Women make up 74% of our workforce, but are fewer in number when it comes to senior roles. That's uncomfortable knowledge, and we need to make the necessary changes to close this gap. We are committed to measures such as unconscious bias training, flexible working options, encouraging applications for leadership roles through mentoring and leadership development, and new recruitment processes, which we believe will help to expand our pool of talent. At Leicestershire Fire and Rescue Service, the gap is 20%. Rick Taylor, Chief Fire and Rescue Officer, said, "We know there is still a way to go in terms of gender pay equality. However, we continue to take actions to reduce the pay gap through the recruitment of more women, especially as firefighters. However, we know our service is not representative of the communities we serve." And then when it comes to the Leicestershire Police, their figures show a gender pay gap of 14.3%. And a spokeswoman for the force said, "Care needs to be taken in interpreting these figures. And whilst we pride ourselves as operating as one police family, our workforce, unlike many other public sector bodies, comprises two very different types of worker. On the one hand, we have police officers, servants of the Crown, who operate within police regulations and nationally agreed pay structures, which are wholly different to the other main branch of our workforce, which is contracted employees." And when we come to the City Council, it says that white people at Leicester City Council earn 10.37% more than employees from black and ethnic minorities. So Councillor Cole asked for the figures to be revealed at a recent City Council meeting. And delivering the figures, City Mayor Sir Peter Soulsby said, "This is very much a work in progress and there's still some way to go. Although the figures are not as good as the gender pay gap, they are not disastrously bad. The gender pay gap at the City Council is 0.46%. The gap is better than it's been in the past, but it's not something we should be complacent about." And they're suggesting that there needs to be more encouragement for people from black and other ethnic origins to go for the much more important managed senior management roles. And that's something the council has to work on.
They've had their day. Phone boxes may be replaced by advertising columns with free Wi-Fi. BT plans to remove more than 50 phone boxes in Leicester and replace some of them with advertising units providing free Wi-Fi. The company has lodged a string of planning applications to install in-link units at 34 locations across the city centre. Similar units have already been installed in parts of London and Leeds and are now being proposed here as a part of a deal between the communications giant and InLink, a tech startup firm. So far, nearly 50,000 people have subscribed to the Wi-Fi service. A BT spokesman told the Leicester Mercury the provision of Wi-Fi would be a free public service funded purely by the advertising shown on the two screens of each unit. He said the only data it would collect from people who signed up to using the Wi-Fi would be usage numbers. The spokesman said the phone boxes to be removed were seldom used now because most of the population carried mobile phones. However, more than 100 additional kiosks would still be left across the city. BT said that in other cities, the removal of redundant phone boxes had freed up space in cities for things such as new trees and cycle racks. Each unit provides Wi-Fi to a range of 100 metres, so the vast majority of the area within the inner ring road would likely be covered. City Mayor Sir Peter Soulsby said, "As the planning authority, there will be issues for the council to consider with these applications, but I have long been complaining about the clutter of unused telephone boxes. Many these days are little more than spaces to hang advertising, and if they are to be replaced with something else, I would rather that something had a purpose. I welcome the idea of getting 21st century connectivity across the city. We will obviously consider how we might use any space that is freed up by the removal of phone boxes, but my view is that it should be better just to have some space cleared."
Half the woman I used to be. A woman has been given the title of Greatest Loser, and she couldn't be happier. Karen Green was 28 stone when she decided to start losing weight with help from the Slimming World group in Burbage. After slimming down to 13 stone in just 2 years, she has been named the Greatest Loser 2018 by Slimming World. She said, "I feel like a new woman since losing weight. In fact, I look so different that people who I haven't seen for a while often can't believe I'm the same person. For me, though, it's the change on the inside that's been the greatest. I'm happier, healthier, and much more confident now." The 46-year-old joined the Burbage group, which meets on Saturdays and is run by Natalie Jones, in April 2016. Karen says, "My weight impacted on so many aspects of my life, from struggling to find clothes that I liked to fit, to not being able to do simple everyday tasks without feeling tired and out of breath. Before I lost the weight, I hated having my photo taken, and whenever I saw pictures of myself, I knew that my smile wasn't real, yet now I'm beaming. Like an estimated 61.5% of the population of the Hinckley area, Karen's was putting her health at risk by being overweight. Her weight was also putting a huge strain on her health, with 2 full knee replacements, a foot being held together with pins and screws, as well as very high blood pressure. Describing her first meeting with the Slimming World group, Karen said, "Walking through those doors was one of the hardest things I've ever done. I was embarrassed about my size and scared that I might be the biggest person there. I needn't have worried, though. Everyone there was so friendly, especially my consultant, Natalie." Karen, who has gone from a dress size of 34 to 14, followed the club's eating plan and swapped biscuits, pizza and chocolate for homemade curries, fish pie and pasta. She said, "People think slimming means going hungry, eating nothing but salad, or obsessively counting every calorie you eat. It's not like that at all with Slimming World, though. I love food, and it's never once felt like I was on a diet. In fact, people are always surprised at how much food I have on my plate, and I can't believe I'm losing weight eating so much delicious food and without ever feeling hungry. I still enjoy all my favourite meals like burgers and chips and roast dinners, but I've learned how to make small changes like using lean meat or cooking with low-calorie spray instead of oil or butter." Natalie, who runs the Burbage Slimming World group, said, "The changes we've seen in Karen are incredible. I hope her success will inspire other people who would like to lose weight by forming new lifestyle habits and become happy and healthier to take action."
Campaigners aim to secure Big Pitt's long-term future. A wildlife haven that has long been under threat from developers could be protected by a new project. Campaigners against plans for homes on the Big Pitt in Hinckley have met to discuss ideas for protecting the site, a former clay quarry off Ashby Road, which has been eyed by developers for several years. Plans for homes have been met with resistance, and campaigners have met at the Plough in Hinckley to discuss ideas. The meeting followed a decision to refuse planning permission for 60 homes on the site, once drained and filled in. Dan Stokes of the Big Pitt Resistance Group said the aim was now to pursue fundraising and explore grant opportunities with a view to protecting the site, ideally as a nature reserve and public asset. With this new direction in mind, a sister group has been formed, Big Pitt Community Group / Pitt Stop. Hinckley and Bosworth Borough and Leicestershire County Council Councillor David Bill, who has long battled to save the Big Pit from development, has backed the new group's aims. He has written to planning officers urging them not to drop the official designation of the area as public open space. Addressing borough planning official Kirsty Rea, he said, "Many years ago, I came to the conclusion that stretches of water in the Hinckley area, such as the Big Pit, Little Pit, the Wharf and the Sketchley Lakes, should be recognised for what they are, visually attractive, a haven for wildlife, and possibly suitable for recreational pursuits in some instances. They're also lungs of fresh air which benefit everyone. I was chairman of the planning committee and I managed to some degree to get these sites recognised as public open spaces. Time has moved on, but I now understand that planning officers wish to remove the designation of the Big Pit as a public open space because the public no longer have access. At the time, the public did have access, and there is plenty of evidence to support this. So I am asking you to think again before removing this degree of protection. Some of us have been fighting to save this site for about 20 years and still believe it is worth saving. The latest situation is that a new group has been formed to try to raise sufficient funds and buy it. It is a tall order, but it is worth the effort. Details of the new group are available on Facebook at Big Pit Community Group -Pit Stop.
Charges set to rise for garden waste. Charges for garden waste collections in a borough will rise from next month. Charnwood Borough Council said the fee of £40 a year will apply from May the 1st up to the current fee of £28. The authority said the increase is needed to make up for a shortfall in funding and ensure the quality of service is maintained. Councillor Lee Harper-Davies, lead member for the Performance of Major Contracts, said, "The garden waste scheme is a high-quality service and an extremely popular one, with more than 34,000 subscriptions. However, to maintain that quality and make up for shortfalls in our funding, we believe it necessary to increase the charge. We accept the increase for 2018 is larger than in previous years, but these are challenging times for local government funding. In 2015, we lost a significant amount of funding when the County Council withdrew recycling credits worth about £300,000 per annum, which was used to help cover the costs of the service. We've had to increase the charge since then to help make up that shortfall and cover increases in the costs providing the service. There are further challenges ahead as recycling credits, which contribute to the general household recycling service, are being withdrawn by the County Council this year, a loss of £500,000 to the Borough Council. Despite this, we will still offer free bulky waste collections to Charnwood residents, while other authorities charge £15 or more. While we are fortunate to be very financially stable, we need to manage our finances carefully and sensibly. Garden waste collection is not a service we have to provide, nor do people have to subscribe. But we believe it's an excellent service, value for money, and one people want." A council spokesman said anyone subscribing for the first time before the 1st of May could do so at the existing rate of £28. Existing subscribers will be informed about the new charge 2 weeks before their subscription ends. Harborough District Council brought in a £40 charge in 2016. Oadby and Wigston Borough Council brought in a £35 charge this month. To sign up for the garden waste services, visit charnwood.gov.uk/garden waste.
We have now reached the end of the Leicester Mercury Talking Newspaper. If you wish to contact the Sound Services Department of Vista, please telephone the Vista helpline 0116 249 8839. So from Marion, Stacia and Mary, goodbye.
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 Thank you, Rob, for recording this.